Repeat offender.
Repeat offender.
Won't those repeat offenders please leave us alone? It's the Day Trippers. A scrappy 3 points, a last gasp wonder save, a horrific Jared Lucas midfield access, and another orthodox football genius responsible for the win. Have we gone back in time? On tonight's show, we're joined by a man who broke the contometer in his last visit, that's Lee Mahady. The self-appointed Simon Cowell of the Trippers, complete with his obligatory high waistband, Phil Casey is in. Emerging from his hole, we have the mole, and we're finally delighted to speak to the Redman's anarchist-in-chief, Chris Pajak, aka Mr. Blood Red. Right, let's begin in the only place possible and reflect on the opening day victory against Southampton at Anfield. This was far from straightforward win, and the manner in which the 3 points were attained was not what some of the splendid pre-seasons in football had suggested it might be. So should we just be content with a winning start against a team that showed more ability and cohesion than their decimation might have led us to believe, or is there a little bit of cause for concern after that game? Chris, could you start us off there, please?
Yeah, of course, mate. I don't think there's any cause to concern just yet. I think they're still, Southampton is still a well-drilled football team, do you know what I mean? Pochettino was there last season. He did a bloody good job. Yes, we have ripped the heart out of that side. But there's players there who know what they were doing, and I think that their decline has been made a lot of for no reason, do you know what I mean? I think Koeman's come in. It looks like he's doing a good job, basically, so far. But I think the way that they play football is really interesting. I think, you know, we play with a very high pressing game, and I think Rodgers was probably a little bit pragmatic in his approach on Sunday against them, because when we did press them high up the pitch, I felt they passed it round us very, very easily. And then they sort of cut through us, and that's when they sort of attacked us really well. So I think Rodgers was a little bit pragmatic. It's been a bit of a bogey team under him, Southampton anyway, and he's gone, do you know what? It's more important to get the frigging 3 points than score four like we did against Dortmund and get attacked on the break.
Yeah, and given that there was that, I think a lot of people would row in behind you there and agree that there was caution on display. Given that, should we just basically be content we got 3 points on the board to open the season?
Oh, fucking right, yeah. I mean, it's one of them, innit? It was so nervous inside the ground because it matters so much this early on in the season already. And that's because we know it's going to be tight this season. And we know that if we drop points, it's going to put massive pressure on us. And I think that the crowd was nervous because of that. But more importantly, look, we've got to get the 3 points. And Rodgers, in fairness to him, did it last year as well. We didn't start great. We were pragmatic in our approach at the beginning of the season. And the fluidity, and we basically started dicking teams further on in the season. Yeah. I think much the same will happen again.
Chris, you were sitting there, or standing there in the crowd, I'm sure, on the day. It seemed really quiet at times and really edgy. I mean, basically, if you were listening to the coverage I was listening to, it was mostly Southampton fans you could hear singing. There was that real tension that has been in the ground before. Is that fair to say, or was it different when you were there live?
No, it was spot on, to be honest, and it was much the same for a lot of last season as well.
Yeah,
I think we're not used to winning anymore, and it matters so much to all of the fans that we do get that league title for the first time in how many years. Like, that, we just don't know how to deal with it. And to be honest, I was talking to Paul's dad, Paul off the Redmen. His dad was saying it was exactly the same when we were winning. He said, you feel the nerves so much that it is difficult to get that atmosphere going. Southampton fans, though, fair play to them. They came, they fucking sang their hearts out. They gave Lovren some stick. Yeah. A good set of fans, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Molly, where are you in terms of the overall feeling that you got from the game? Happy overall? Content overall? was it more of a sort of a disappointment in the way that the performance panned out?
Well, for me, Trev, it's like a plane landing. Every plane landing is a good landing, and for me, every win is a good win. You know, so you can't really be, okay, we were a bit nervous at times, but I think a lot of that is the players know themselves that they're up for another title tilt this season. In previous years, we might have looked at the opening game of the season and win and lose, it wouldn't be much of a big deal. There's still plenty of the season left to go.
Yeah.
But already, it's only one game in, and already people are talking about a title push. Mm. It's a bit crazy to think about it. But, you know, what we showed last season, that is why the talk is there. So, look, I was delighted to get the win. And I didn't care how it came about. It was a scrappy 1-0, 2-1 victory or a 5-0 victory.
Yeah,
I didn't mind as long as we got that victory.
You take them all season and accept the nerves once we keep getting the points.
How many titles have Man United won in the past with those scrappy 1-0 victories or last-minute goals and so on? So, most certainly, I don't mind how the win comes about. If they come about like we did at times last season where we absolutely blitzed teams and won 4-0 and 5-1 and 6-1 and so on, fantastic. But sure, if it comes down to that and we're just scrapping 2-1 wins, I'll take that every day of the week.
Yeah, bloody sure. Lee, Molly makes a very good point there, you know. We should really just be counting our blessings. We're being considered in the same kind of level as the A-League teams now, and we got the bloody result.
Are we really, though? If any of the punditry going around like the likes of the sports channels these days is anything to go by, I wouldn't think we're being considered in that league at all.
You've picked up on that dismissive thing too then, yeah.
That the dismissive thing, we've been completely fucking written off from all angles. Like, you know, like sure, I think even like if you look at, I think if you still go to, you know, the odd bookie, like you're still going to find United are actually shorter odds on the title than we are.
No, that's remarkable.
Fucking comical. You know, I found a great deal of similarity in the opener to this season to the one last season. You know, like a team from the upper mid echelon of the table with a new manager still trying to adjust to, well, not really a new way of playing. I think Koeman might have actually continued Pochettino's kind of way, his methods more to the way, like more than Mark Hughes would have continued on from Tony Pulis in the previous season. But it ended, like, you know, the similarity was actually very striking. You know, like, it was a hard-fought game. We were made work for the 3 points. Mm. A winning goal from Sturridge and an intervention from Mignolet at the end that quite, well, that, you know, let's call it what it was. He actually did save us the 3 points,
absolutely.
Despite the fact that he was rather nervy nearly the entire game.
Yeah.
You know, it seemed like we were going to start the same way. We didn't exactly come out of the traps very early last season, and it seems like we're still sort of, it'll probably be, you know, we'll probably be going through all the lower gears before we actually get going in this season as well. Like, and but with a game as big as City next week, it's a little bit of a cause for concern.
Yeah, yeah.
Wouldn't call it too much of a cause for concern, but I think that I think Southampton were probably more value for the 3 points on the day than we were. I think we really stole it, to be honest.
Yeah, Phil, a lot of symmetry there, as Lee says, between the first match of last season and the first one of this campaign, and the key person involved, the key two people are Danny Sturridge and Mignolet. I want to talk to you about Mignolet. He was probably our most important player, it's arguable, isn't it, on the day?
Yeah, like going back to the, you know, I said this to you last Monday when we recorded that I thought this was going to be a tight game. And I think most people who look at our opening day form for the last 10, 11 years, we've rarely won by more than one goal. We've struggled to win our opening day matches. That's only the fourth time we've won our opening day game in 11 seasons. So, you know, we have in recent history struggled to win our opening match. And that's even coming off seasons where we finished runners up or, you know, challenged for a title or even come off the back of Europe or whatever it is. It's a mad stat that's actually there. But, you know, when I think back to the game, everything that, you know, could possibly go wrong on the day almost did in terms of what was there. There was a questionable selection. There was, you know, a mistake that led to their goal. We let them back into the team. We dropped their tempo, all that type of things. But crucially, we won that game. And I said it last week, it didn't give a fuck about the performance. We had to win that opening match. With the two games in front of us, we had to win it. It was a win at all costs, and we won at all costs. Mm. And the huge thing for me that was something a little bit different to the way we won games last year was we managed to score in the second half of the game we pulled the game back to us as well. You know, after Lucas was taken off, Gerrard becomes more influential on the game, and you can actually see it. There's a thing of, I'm linking into the pod tonight where it actually shows the average position of the play over 90 minutes, and I sent it to you last night, and it's very intuitive when you see where it is. And Gerrard becomes a huge focal point from about the 63rd minute on, which is when Lucas goes off the actual pitch, and it just changed our shape. We become a lot more compact, and we play a lot better. It looks like that we play a lot more passes through the midfield that we had been up until then. So, you know, there's a lot of good things, but Mignolet, to me, listen, the guy, I questioned whether long term he would do it because he'd have to step up a gear again, and I was delighted with his performance. I was absolutely delighted. I know Lee said, you know, he looked a bit dodgy, whatever, but to me it wasn't. The guy came for everything. Last year we said, you know, he was hesitant to come out for crosses. He came for every cross. And as a goalkeeper, you don't have to catch the ball, you have to get a tell and touch on it. You have to change the direction of the ball. If you change the direction of the ball, every player is going for the ball in one direction. If you make the slightest touch on it, you can take it off a player's head, and he did that on a couple of occasions. He got a great punch where he actually got a free against him, but called out, and his saves, listen, he's elite class when it comes to shot stopping in the world, and you've seen it yesterday, the touch he gets on that, you can only see it in playback, but the touch is essential for changing the direction of the flight of the ball onto the underside of the crossbar.
And for all the improvements that we made, as you say, in terms of the shape, and look, we're going to go on talk about Lucas in the midfield and Gerrard and all that, but for all the improvements, that chance that they had at the end, that Schneiderlin had at the end, that save is, it's a stunning save.
It's incredible. I remember when they show it again and you see the touch, if Paul Brennan here, I was standing up going, Jesus, that's brilliant! You know, it was incredible. And it's the same as the moment from last year against the Stoke game, you know. That's the penalty save and then the follow-up save. Like, the follow-up save was just as essential in that penalty save against Stoke last year as the actual penalty save. And that there was also another save he made, which is brilliant. He was going the wrong way. He came back. It was another Schneiderlin chance at 1-1.
The one down low to his right.
Down low to his right.
Amazing
and
save.
It's an incredible save. Yeah. You watch it back again. His weight has transferred all the way onto his left foot, and he has to get his body back down and holds onto the ball with a Southampton player closer. Listen, the guy had, in my mind, he showed a new level to his game which wasn't there previously. He still has issues with speed of distribution. But even his mid-range passes were a lot better than has been seen. He was hitting his fullbacks with the passes to the halfway line. And I've seen as well, at certain times in the first half, when our midfield, before Lucas's legs going at about 30 minutes, we were pushed on a lot higher, and Mignolet's starting position was a lot higher than it has been. I could see him in the camera frame, which you didn't see him in the camera frame last year when the ball was in the middle toward the pitch.
And that's what we were hoping for. Yeah. That's what we were hoping to see.
I want to see him keep that up now. If he keeps that up for the season, there's a chance this guy can go on to be a special goalkeeper.
And tell me about that one incident I wanted to talk about as well, the high kind of floaty one that was looking like it was going to drop into the top corner. Now, a lot of people were saying, oh, he should have held it. But for me, that's a super save.
Listen, from the reports that was there, it was a very swirly breeze in Anfield. Yeah. The ball was in, was and Chris, you can probably say if this is right or not, but the ball was in the flight of the wind. So when it was caught up, he wasn't expecting it to dip as much as it was. And his readjustment of his feet and the way he dealt with the ball was exceptional, because he ends up colliding with the post. He catches that ball, collides with the post. There's a good chance that he drops the ball.
Yeah.
And because there's no player around him, somebody can just slot that ball home then at that point. He does exactly what you need him to do with that one.
No, that's spot on. I mean, I was right online with that free kick, and I was worried big time that he wouldn't get across in time, or he wouldn't notice that it did get caught up in the wind. And then, as you say, I think that's an absolutely great save, and that's one of the saves that wasn't picked up on in the media.
Yeah.
And Chris, like, again, as a man who's lucky enough to get to see it live, what did you make of the man making his competitive debut there, Dejan Lovren, and his mucker there, Skrtel, alongside him? How did that look as a pairing for you?
As a pairing, I think they've got something there. I think there's something to work on, do you know what I mean? I think Lovren's a real big talk, and you can hear him on the sidelines, and that's something that we've obviously lacked, not just since Carragher, but in the type of player that he is since Hippier, really, more than anything. Because he's an organiser as well, and I think he actually gave Skrtel a bit of his voice, because Skrtel was looking around and going, fucking hell, who are you? You weren't here last season, you're telling me what to do. Who do you think you are? Like, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Skrtel's stepping up a bit because of that. And it's causing a little bit of a competitive rivalry, I think. And they're both front foot defenders, aren't they? And I like that about them.
Yeah.
And I think Rodgers is actually making every one of our defenders a front foot defender, because from what I've seen of Moreno, he's exactly the same. And Manquillo looks to do exactly the same as well. And I think that's more to do with how we defend. The only thing I would say about Skrtel is that I still don't think we leave the two centre backs exposed quite often, and he's not good in space.
Yeah,
he's good as a unit of four defenders, and it, whether he can adapt to that this season or not will remain to be seen. But Lovren was how he dealt with that groch of a Pele. Do you know what I mean? That you know, you hear the name Pele, never seen him before. You think little Samba skills kind of guy? No, he's like a man mountain of a of a frigging tank playing up front. Like, and you're like, who the fuck's that? Like, that's Pele. You're having a fucking laugh, aren't you? That's not Pele.
I don't want to be a pedant. They can't be there. I don't want to be the pedant there, Chris. But I think it's actually pronounced Pele.
I don't give a damn. Like, to
I'll say it as a sorry, man.
And
that's it.
Listen, Lee just wanted to get his first C word of the night in there. That's all right.
Oh, yeah, by the way.
Molly, the guys either side of Lovren and Skirt, like, of course, talk about the two lads if you want. But the guys either side of them, Makio and Johnson, we can probably talk at length more about Johnson, but let's focus on the young man making his competitive debut, Makio. How did you feel he did on the day?
Yeah, he had a tidy game. He certainly looked a bit gamey. Like, at one stage, I was looking at some stats over the weekend that he pressed for the ball like 14 times compared to Johnson's 2 times through the whole game.
Yeah.
And Rodgers' whole philosophy of the game is all about pressing for the ball and not giving the opposition time in the ball. So you can certainly see why he'd want someone like Manquillo in the side. And what's really impressive is he's only at the club, what, 2 weeks, probably had a couple of training sessions with the first team, and he slotted right in. You could see that he is still a bit raw, he is still a bit rusty. But after a few games in that side, he's one to look out for.
Yeah, wasn't dissimilar to the very first appearances we saw of Flanagan back in Kenny's time. Like, just the enthusiasm sort of made up for any of the other shortcomings. Now, I think he got caught a couple of times positionally, but Jesus, as you say, he's gamey. Like, he really does. He also anticipated a couple of very good ones too. There's definitely a player there, isn't there?
Yeah, it's a good comparison to make, actually, Flanagan. He reminded me a bit of the way Flanagan plays. And plus, he cut out something like 3 crosses coming into the ball. And our big weakness last season was crosses coming into the ball. And so, like, 3 crosses in one game is another impressive stat from the last. It's certainly a good game. And even going back to our other debutant on the day, Lovren, I thought he was sublime. I really did. He was absolutely fantastic. I know a few people were saying he could have did more for the first goal, that he should have been closer to Tadic, but if he was any closer to him, they would have to have a civil ceremony. Honestly, he was absolutely brilliant on the day. You know, he was so composed and his passing was fantastic.
Yeah.
You're really nitpicking if you're saying things like that about him. I thought he was brilliant on the day. And Manquillo as well, you know, he put in a shift there. As you can see, there is a player in him.
Yeah, I heard a few people talking about distribution from Lovren. Maybe Lee, you might have a take on this, but I want you to also look at the guy on the other side and introduce the topic, Glenn Johnson, for us as well, if you would. And bear in mind, fella, you've already told us you have an allowance, so here we go.
Oh, don't worry, I'm sure there's plenty of other words I can use to describe Glenn Johnson. But like,
starting with Lovren, what do you make of his distribution and passing? I heard it criticised by a few people in the interim.
To be honest, I don't want to be the one to come up with the unpopular opinion, but then again, you know, whenever is my opinion popular. So I was actually a very harsh critic of Lovren. I actually didn't want him in the first place, to be honest. I wasn't impressed with Southampton in general last season, let alone any of the individual players. But after he came, you know, I started to decide to focus on the positives and like, and I found his debut at Dortmund extremely promising.
Yeah.
On the day now, I would have said Skirtle was actually the better one of the two. I thought that, Skirtle obviously doesn't pass as well, that's plain to see, but I thought Skirtle came for every ball that came near him with more enthusiasm, and whilst Lovren's passing, like, you know, I've got nothing but rank and 10 for stats, to be honest, but he did complete a great deal of his passing, but I also found that, despite the fact of, you know, an awful lot of them were finding a teammate, I kept seeing, like, on at least 3 occasions, he found a teammate at a point where they would have actually been in trouble. He sort of passed them into danger, and I was a little bit critical of that.
Yeah.
And some of his clearances were a little bizarre as well. There was one in particular, I think, where him and Mignolet were shouting at each other over it afterwards. Like, he cleared it on his flank right out to the opposite flank past Manquillo for a throw. Like, I was a bit flabbergasted as to what he was doing.
Yeah.
But Overall, I thought he enjoyed a rather promising debut, despite the fact he was pretty much sold by Tadic for that goal.
Yeah. And, well, speaking then of a man who certainly didn't cover himself with glory in terms of stats and hasn't done for quite a while, what did you think of Glenn Johnson's performance on the day? Was it a step up from the most recent bad ones or down?
I don't know. Glenn seems to be at in some sort of competition with himself to see if he can actually play even shitter than the last game.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what he's at, but to be honest, Lucas and himself competed to see who could be the bigger pile of shite on the day. But Johnson, I don't know what it is about him. It's not even that he's bad. It's the fact that he doesn't seem to care anymore. I think his standard run of play now seems to be just knocking it 20 yards down the line, like miscontrolling it, getting dispossessed and then jogging back in response. It's so frustrating to look at.
Mm.
You've seen him jog back?
We just get highlights packages, Chris. You know, that's
you don't see the off the ball stuff. Generally, he's not on camera, so it's a good shout that he hasn't been jogging back.
Yeah, no, I found Johnson to be one of at least three players complicit in the equaliser. I thought that Lovren actually does, in his defence, actually have to go and meet Tadic, but unfortunately, if you come out there, you get sold.
Yeah,
but. Then there was also Lucas, who completely just was clueless to Klein's presence. And I also thought that when the ball got played wide right at the goal, I think if Glenn Johnson actually makes any kind of effort at all to step across him, he could prevent that shot.
Yeah.
So, to be honest, man, his performance was an absolute zero. Awful.
Phil, I'm going to offer you the steaming plate of poo. And feel free to just push it away and talk about Gerrard on the midfield if you'd rather.
No, I'll address the elephant in the room because it's and I'll be as liberal as I can.
Come back to us. The
thing that you find, you always think of Glenn. When you think of Glenn Johnson, you remember his first couple of years at the club where he was an exceptional fullback, right? Mm. And then it's very hard to marry those couple of years with what we've witnessed over the last 2 years. It just doesn't, even though he's gotten a bit older, it doesn't seem to make any sense that you can have such a drop off in form. Now on Sunday, he just did mad things, just pure mad things, and that's it doesn't make any sense. Even with the goal, he's culpable for. I know that somebody was he was playing the ball onside as well for the one that Mignolet saves. He's about 5 yards behind the rest, and Lovren is getting the defence up. Even Skertler's reacting and coming up with him. Manquillo is in the line, and if you look, he's actually 3 yards behind the rest of him. When the ball does come off the post, he misses the initial header, which allows Long to get the header away on the actual goal. Now it was only for Long's poor finishing on that instance that. That they didn't score.
I've seen him praised for his intervention there.
And in fairness, if you look at it briefly, you can say, Jesus, he did well to put Long off, right? But if you actually watch the whole instant as it emerges, he misses a simple header under no pressure as it comes off.
Brushes him away.
Yeah. But the other thing that, and I think it's interesting because Manquillo started off, had 10, 15 minutes where he was trying to find his way into the game, and Bertrand and Tadic really looked to expose him. But in fairness to the kid, he actually grew into the game as it went on, and by the time we got around to the second half, Southampton had focused on attacking down our right flank where Johnson was, as opposed to focusing on Manquillo's, and most of the chances were coming where they were looking for the pockets that Lucas and Johnson were leaving or not sort of defending correctly and looking to exploit it. And it's a bit of cause and effect because they look to do that, then those players get put under a bigger microscope, and because they get put under a bigger microscope, if they don't step up to the plate, they look worse than they should necessarily look worse than. And, take it. I'm sure we'll discuss the decision in terms of the starting 11 and even looking at the preview of next week. But you've got to ask yourself a question. If a guy is so far out of form, at what point does he become untenable in the team? And I think we've reached that point a good bit at this stage. And hopefully the signing of Moreno corrects that instance. And I don't want to get into a personal thing or a long diatribe about how crap he was on the day, but it's just there is questions there that he needs to look at himself. And we said it two or three games into the pre-season friendly, he doesn't even look interested at this stage. And I thought, it's pre-season friendlies, players can look disinterested, but a league match, opening day of the season? There is no way a player should look disinterested for those 90 minutes.
Sorry, go ahead.
I just wanted to jump in there. I made a particular point after the game and gone there. Some people were even starting to say that Tadic was actually getting the better of Manquillo. I completely disagreed with that. I thought he had him blocked off and well marked. And I also made a very key point of saying that the goal stems from Tadic drifting into the centre. and targeting the right flank. The goal comes from the right flank. Tadic only ever started to get any joy after he actually left away from Mankeo. And I think if you're going to sum up Johnson's form in a sentence, I think it speaks absolute volumes that the winger actually managed to realise that this 19-year-old fullback was actually was less difficult to target than an experienced 30-year-old.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Like
football,
Can I come in there, Trev?
Yep, Molly, please do.
Yeah, it's just quitting on the whole Johnson point. Like, I'll be honest, I had to go back to my Sky Plus box to make sure that I watched the same game as everybody else, because I actually thought Johnson did all right. Did he play a blinder? No, well, certainly not. But there was a couple of stages. Like, he made one tackle inside the box.
From Klein.
And I have to say, I thought that was just as good as the Mignolet save, because that was goal-bound. That was a fantastic tackle. I looked around to my young lad who was watching the game and said, "Who made that tackle? I thought it was Lovren." He said, "Johnson." I was like, "No way." And, okay, I know what Phil was saying about the header against Long, that he completely missed it. But he still put Long off. Like, Long, he didn't have a free header by any means. Johnson was still there to put him off. If you missed the header, the next thing you should be doing is putting the player off, and that's what he did.
But he didn't even know he was putting him off, Molly. That's the thing. It was by accident as opposed to by choice.
I don't buy that, Phil. Like, as soon as he missed the header, as watching slow mo, his head turned to see who was behind him, and he saw Long was there. He kind of edged in towards him to put him off. So I think that was certainly done on purpose. He didn't have a bad game. I genuinely don't think he did. Did he have a blinder, as I said? No, he didn't have a blinding game.
Well, Molly, this is interesting. As someone who's putting the case for the defence there, what would you like? Is it inevitable that he's going to start again the next match? If Moreno comes in and Moreno shows any form, Phil's already saying now maybe that means that we're looking at our two new young fellas on the flanks and with Flanagan to step in. Is that going to happen, or do you think is Johnson going to be a starter? He seems to be under Brendan, doesn't he?
Well, it's a good question, Trev. Like, I looked at it and I thought to myself, well, Moreno isn't at the club that long.
Yeah.
So will Brendan stick him straight in at left back? And I thought to myself, no. But having said it, he did it with Mankeo and Lovren. So there's no reason why he won't do it with Moreno to put him in at left back. So then the big question is, who goes right back?
Yeah.
Will he stick with Mankeo or will he stick with Glenn Johnson? You know, and for the next game, it's against City. That's a big game for a young lad like Mankeo, who hasn't played a lot of games even last season, to come in and face that. So it wouldn't shock me if he started with Johnson next week at right back and Moreno on the left. And do you know what? I think he deserves a shot at it at very least.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. That's interesting, Chris. To move on, move slightly up the field a little bit, and the partnership that caused so much, moaning on the day and afterwards was the renewal of the Gerrard and Lucas sort of partnership there in the middle, with Henderson ahead of them. There's been lots of talk about that in the past, and there's been lots of, I suppose, almost nasty stuff about Lucas Leiva and his contribution of late as well. Now, without necessarily veering in towards that sort of angle, how is that even vaguely tenable going forward? Can you see Lucas starting again if there are options, for example?
No, not really. Yeah. For me, that experiment has been going on for 5 years now, and it hasn't worked.
Yeah.
More than a handful of times. They just cannot work together on the field. I mean, Lucas is better. And, you know, I'm a fan of Lucas, but Lucas is a good defensive midfielder when he's on his own. When he's got to actually think about, am I going here or is Gerrard? That sort of split second of trying to think, what am I doing? Generally, the attacker gets away. And that's why it doesn't work for me. And Gerrard, when he's given his own space, he can spray the ball around a bit better. I was really surprised that we went with the two deep-line midfielders against Dortmund, and I was even more surprised that we continued it in this game, to be honest, because I thought probably we'd start the season with the diamond again.
Yeah.
And I don't really know why we didn't.
And would you, like, given that we spoke earlier on about Glenn Johnson and how he's likely to start, he seems to be under Brandon, Gerrard also, and probably rightly, will start more games than he doesn't. He'll start every game that he's fit to play. If we take it as a given he's there, isn't it fair to say that he works better as a one there behind two rather than as part of a two with a man ahead or even in the diamond?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah. Look, you know where you stand when it's just you doing the job.
Yeah.
You know, you've got no one to trust in. You just have to, if the ball's over there, you have to fucking go for it.
Yeah.
There's no like, oh, it is 10. Do you know what I mean? I'll just sit off over here and wait for whatever happens. You've got to go for it. But I don't see Gerrard as a defensive midfielder in the conventional sense anyway. I see him on the field as a deep lying playmaker. I don't think he's there to bust the gut like Mascherano and break up attacks. You know, I think that's what the Jordan Henderson's, the Coutinho's and the Raheem Sterling's do further up the pitch. Yeah. And if their pressing doesn't work, then he has to come into it. But he's not the destroyer in the same way a Makélélé is. And he's never going to be that again.
Yeah, yeah, and shouldn't be, I guess. Phil, yeah. Do you want to talk about that?
The Lucas thing, as has been said, has been done to death. You don't need to go into it much. The axis doesn't work between the two of them, right? I was trying to think what the logic in playing it was. And the only thing I could come back to, and it's what Chris said, Lucas, for me, has 35 minutes in his legs. And if you watch the first 35 minutes of that game again, Lucas isn't sitting beside Gerrard in a two. He's pushed up into the midfield, yeah. And Henderson and himself and Coutinho were almost like a tree in front of Gerrard, pressing the Southampton team. And we were much better at that stage, and that's when we scored our goal and all. And Southampton weren't getting the joy as they did between, say, 35 and 65 minutes. And his legs seemed to go at the 30-minute mark. And you can actually physically see it, because his position on the pitch starts to drop back, yeah, and drop drops, back. Yeah. And it also forced our defence back, because our defence were actually quite high up until that point, and they started drifting back then towards their own box. Now, what that has done is it's attracted Southampton onto the team, and that's when they start to get joy out of it. Now, it's a fair point that if you want to accommodate Lucas in the team, it's either Lucas or Gerrard. You can't play the two, as has been well said. And if you look at our run-in towards the back end of last year, it's when we played Gerrard as the pivot there, and then we played two players with legs, be it Henderson, be it Allen, be it Coutinho around him, right? And if Emre Can wasn't fit enough, and going back to the Dortmund game, people said that Can may have picked up a small knock or whatever, but what Can is able to do, and we were able to revert to that too in a defensive sense, but when we broke with the ball, he has so much energy like Henderson that he was straight away able to push into the midfield with Henderson, and they became a two in front of Gerrard. So it prevented the other teams being able to get on top of us and allowed us to stay up much higher when we played against Dortmund. And in fact, most people were complaining that we looked a bit susceptible to the ball over the top. Now, there wasn't a ball over the top against Southampton this time, because what happened was, as soon as Lucas dropped, because it was earlier in the game, and he sat in beside Gerrard, they had to go wide and they had to go or play through us through the centre, and that's what they started to do as his legs really gave out, which was around as soon as the second half kicked off. The chap couldn't run. He couldn't actually physically get around the pitch at that stage, and you could see it at about the just before they scored in the 55th minute. From about the 48 to the goal itself, he can't get across the pitch. He started giving away simple passes. He played in the lead up to the goal, he gave away the ball twice, as it was, and in a way I feel a bit sorry for him, because the way we play just doesn't suit Lucas Leiva and his physicality, his physical abilities anymore. And a lot of that can be down to the injury, and a lot of that would be waylaid so much if he was playing in a team that didn't play with such a quick passing tempo that we play in. So, you know, it's been well thought that a move will suit him. It probably will, and he'll probably look like a different player if he goes somewhere else.
And to be fair, he'd also look a lot better if, as you said, he was dropping in instead of Gerrard. But when you put the two guys together, there's competition for space.
And like, people have been commenting that Gerrard didn't have a particularly good game. I think Gerrard went looking for space. Well, as soon as Lucas dropped into the space that he was naturally occupying for the last 6, 7, 8 months, he starts going looking for space on the actual pitch, and often he appears up in the right full position or the left full position, because naturally he's been dropping in between the two centre backs, and Lucas was there instead. And the gap between what was our defence and what should have been our midfield to Henderson, Coutinho, Sterling, and all becomes much bigger. For about 20-25 minutes in the actual game. And that's like, you know, it just doesn't work as a tandem. We know it doesn't work as a tandem. I think on the day, maybe Brendan would have been better served to play Henderson and Coutinho with Gerrard at the base of it, if there was question marks around Allen or Chan's fitness in his own mind, as opposed to putting Lucas in beside Gerrard. I think we may have got more over it, because you could have then potentially started live or just done something different, or even starting Lambert with Sturridge up front.
That's even more of an issue, isn't it, when Coutinho's being smothered up the top of the field in that system. Lee, when Joe Allen came on, I think it's fair to say that he showed a lot of liveliness. Now, he's not everybody's cup of tea, but for me, he looked a really good footballer, and a fella who's happy to look for the ball and be on the ball and have the energy to do something with it. Did you feel he made a real difference when he came on? And for you, is he the starter if Chan isn't fit in the next game?
To be honest now, that isn't the first time that Alan's actually come off the bench and actually changed the game for the better. I remember, sure, I was at the home game against Swansea back in around, I don't know, March or February. Alan's inclusion absolutely changed that game. You know, it's just his energy as opposed to Luke's, as I said, just the level that he has in his lungs, the level that he has in his legs, it was completely different as well. Albeit now, the fact that it was a good, about 60-odd minutes into the game and he was way fresher, it might have impacted it somewhat. But Alan's always actually demonstrated a great level of energy and diligence. I think his inclusion actually signaled an absolute sea change in the actual flow of the game.
Well, tell me, you hear a definitive statement like that from Phil, and he's not the only man to have said it, where you can't play those two together, right? Many people have said that. Now, if that's the case, what the hell is Brendan thinking? What is the thinking that, this is a very intelligent football man. What's there? Is it going back to the caution that the two lads on the line mentioned earlier on? What's the driving force behind that decision, do you think?
To be honest, man, that's something that, to this day, ever since the game actually was played, has continued to rack my brain, and I'm afraid I don't actually have a good answer for it. There was a few people theorising on Twitter and, and the likes, that it was a shop window thing. If this was as many people theorise, a shop window performance, then it was an absolutely unmitigated disaster.
Yeah.
And, I don't really see, Roger sees these guys week in, week out in training. He's been Lucas Leiva's manager for 2 years now. It should be conclusive to him right now that if we can all see, just from watching the games themselves, that this axis does not work, then I don't see how he thought it would have, especially against a heavy-duty duo who showed Rodgers exactly what a midfield two axis was supposed to play like.
Yeah.
They completely smoked Coutinho out. Schneiderlin and Wanyama are fantastic.
I think the time is long gone where people are just being deliberately nasty. I mean, the rational people are saying it, as well about that setup. Molly, talk to me about the high point of the whole midfield setup, which was Jordan Henderson, who was bloody immense. To be fair, not just that super pass that he played through, but just the level of energy is unbelievable. And some really interesting stuff coming out today about how he played through a lot of personal stuff as well. And just the guy's got tremendous character, doesn't he?
Oh, he was absolutely fantastic on the day, and that assist, wow, that was really something else. When I saw it in replay, I was expecting it to be Coutinho that has played that ball.
Yeah.
But when I saw it was Henderson and how he read those two tackles and the way he looked up, and with his left peg as well, absolutely fantastic. But it's something we've come to expect from going on from last season.
Yeah.
I remember in a pod that we did last season that I said that I believe that Henderson was probably the best English midfielder in the Premiership. And, I'm definitely sticking by that. He is absolutely fantastic. And he's brought more to his game. He's always had that great engine where he go for 90 minutes. But you can see now that he seems to have put on a bit of muscle since the pre-season, since he came back. You can see his confidence has grown. He's a kind of guy that he knows that he's now part of the team, where in previous regimes he probably didn't feel that way, but he certainly feels it now. And I've also noticed he's on some free kick duties at times.
Yeah.
So Roger's given him that as well. So absolutely fantastic. If you don't mind, just back to Lucas though, if you don't mind, because I have to get off my chest about
him. Go ahead.
I can't let it go about him. I got a message on Saturday night to say that Lucas was starting, and I tweeted it out, and I got my mentions absolutely exploded going, Lucas, are you drunk? Are you on drugs? What's the story there? And I fully expected the following day to get absolutely hammered, because I said to myself, there's no way this guy's starting. The guy who told me was supposed to be on a wind-up, there's no way Lucas is starting. And when the team was announced, I remember we were chatting beforehand, and I asked, I said, look, what could be the logical explanation that Lucas is starting? And I think the only thing we actually came up with is that he must have some nudie pics on Brendan Rodgers. that was the only thing we could come up with. But I talked that away, and I said, well, that is very possible that he has that. But let's just quit his. So I was thinking, well, Ken had a bit of a knock. So let's just say that rules him out.
Yeah.
So that left it a straight choice between Alan and Lucas. And then I think maybe Rodgers had looked at that Southampton midfield and saw Wanyama and Schneiderlin, and they're absolutely units, they really are. And let's be honest, Joe Allen, he's fantastic at a lot of things. He's a great passer, great movement, but strength is not one of his strong points.
Yeah.
He is a slight lad, and he does get bullied off the ball at times. And I think maybe he put Lucas in for that reason, just put a bit of extra strength into that midfield. Now, it didn't work out. Didn't work out that way. And I can see that experiment be carried on into the future. But I think that's the only reason that maybe Roger tried that.
Yeah. Chris, haven't seen Jordan Henderson on the day. Was he? Is he the kind of guy that's suggesting himself as a future captain of the club for you?
Oh, definitely. I mean, you know, if you don't mind, I'd like to go back to that assist first of all, like, because I literally nearly came in my pants, like.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, that ball went through, and I was very close to beating one off.
That'll be interesting for the stewards.
Well, yeah, do you know what?
Not to mention the lad in front of you.
Bench, so I was joking around that I could have got Lambert here.
Yeah.
But
there's something about Ricky.
Yeah, exactly.
He's
a future captain, definitely. Yeah. I mean, he's done it at under 21 level for England, hasn't he, already? Mm. Even under when he first signed, basically, and, you know, he was playing wide right. When he was getting brought on by Dalglish, I remember him coming onto the pitch and really being vocal when he came on. And that, to me, back then said what type of a player and what type of a person he is, because he was really not liked by the fans and he wasn't getting many games, yet he still felt himself. He still felt big enough to come onto the pitch and be like, do you know what, lads, we need to do this, we need to do that. And he's always had that leadership, those leadership skills. And now, I think this is going to be his breakout year. Do you know when Gareth Bale did it a couple of years ago, where he just seemed to step up and then he was like, oh, I'm faster than you, and I'm stronger than you,
and I'm better
than you.
Like a realisation,
And it's in his head. And I think that this is going to be Jordan Henderson. He's literally going to be running one day and be like, these are all shit and I'm boss. And then we'll see where Henderson can get to in his career. But I think his roof is really bloody high.
Yeah, that's exciting, actually, to think there's a higher ceiling there. Yeah, go ahead.
It must be rubbing off the back of his head, because there's a strange dose of Rooney going on in the back of his head at the moment.
I saw you saying that during the game. I think that was just a light trick, mate.
I don't know. I'll be keeping an eye on it. But then again, Zidane had one of them. And if he turns out as good as Zidane, I'll be happy enough.
Oh, that's okay then.
Yeah, the monk's that's haircut okay, at Zidane's level, I'll have it.
Actually, speaking of haircuts, Chris, our walking little dino-armed haircut, Raheem Sterling, pretty much the most influential attacker on the field, and looking like a guy who's going to be able to do it week to week to week, which is really encouraging, isn't it?
Raheem Sterling's just... He's unbelievable. Like, he's got the potential to be, and I've been slated for saying this, but I think he's got the potential to be the best player in the world. You know, whether he actually gets to that level or not, I don't know. But I think the potential is definitely there. I see a lot of similarities, and it's very early on to draw it. But I watched Thierry Henry when he used to play for Monaco, went over to a game against FC Sochaux where they beat them 4-1, and his finishing was absolute garbage. But then, when he signed for Juventus, he got a little bit better. And when he came to Arsenal, he just looked like a natural finisher. And I think Sterling's on the same sort of path. When he came into the side, he sort of thought, oh, his finishing's not very good. He's got pace. He's struggling to get past players now once they've got over the speed thing. And ever since, he's starting to look like a natural finisher. It was that goal in pre-season against Man City that got disallowed. And he didn't think about that. No. He just did that. And that's scary, because that was a worldie.
And the goal against City last year, you know, the very key goal that he got, where he just basically put them all in their arse. And even then, the one at the weekend, it's clinical, isn't it? It's very, very, very clinical.
It's sexual football. It is, because, you know, he comes onto the ball and you're expecting him to bury it or something like that. And the nonchalance just to roll a pass Foster. Foster is waiting for him to do something. And he's already got that half a second ahead of Foster. He goes, I don't even belt this. I have this fella on his arse. And he just rolls it. Foster's waiting for a shot. It looks like he's shaping the shoot with something. Mm. And he basically rolls the ball. And there wasn't even pace in the ball that goes past him. It was just like,
It was a pit roller.
It was. And do you know what? He reminds me, he just looks like someone that's learned so much off Suarez. You know, I thought back, do you remember the finish against Newcastle? The one that came over the top and he took it down and he just walked it into the net, right? Mm. And he had such composure to finish that ball. Sterling wasn't even, like, last year with Sterling, he would have thought a couple of times. And, you know, there was a couple of times he went through and he didn't score, or he hit the goalkeeper or something like that. There wasn't even a flicker of emotion in the way he killed that. It was stone cold killer in terms of a finish. And it was, I'm just, like, I get really excited now. I thought to myself when Suarez went, I went, who's going to get me that excited this season? And watching Sterling through pre-season, watching him now, and he's getting me that excited. Like you just know that teams. I said to you, and we've written as well that, you know, who is going to give put that fear factor, the Suarez fear factor, into teams? And when you look at Sterling play at that level, it's like, Jesus, not there isn't a single defence that wants to face him, because he drifts out wide, and when he comes at you at pace, he's now controlling the ball at pace. It's not bouncing off his knees or whatever. He's picking the ball up at pace and going, and now it's starting to show the elements of finish. I think, and someone can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he might have something like 6 goals or 4 goals in his last 6 games. His last 6 league games, and that's phenomenal. Now we're looking at somebody who's bringing, you know, repetition into the composure and the brilliance in his finish. That's frightening.
Wasn't you as well that was talking about the idea of driving for the byline and just knowing that you're going to get there and still at high pace have the control to cut it back, whatever.
Yeah,
Sturridge does that too, and Sturridge brings that too. And speaking of nonchalant finishes, Lee, that was some sexual football left finished by Danny Sturridge for a lad who maybe didn't have the most prominent matches.
I don't know, actually. I thought he barely nicked the thing. Like, when Sterling's header came in, I was like, did he even get a fucking touch on it? Like, it turns out he did. Like, he was actually just turned his body just enough to direct it into the bottom corner. It was really good, actually. Really deft. Like, as far as you're all talking about Sterling now, like, you know, I know Chris saying he's getting slated for the best in the world thing now, but without going quite that far now, I keep thinking now, like, if that kid keeps his head down and concentrates and he continues at his current going rate of development, like, you know, he decides where the ceiling is. Raheem Sterling will decide where the ceiling is, you know, like, and that's the fact that he's playing at, you know, such a high level, constantly starting for a Champions League, now a Champions League playing club at the age of 19, like, is fucking phenomenal. You know, and like, as well, I'll drop back to Henderson as well on that one, like, because to be honest, like, before even just the end of last year, I was his biggest critic. I was like, I'd gotten very frustrated, you know. I'd given him a lot of stick for just being a bag of energy and very little else on top of it now. But game after game, he continued to add more strings to his bow now. Like, and then that culminated basically in that fucking assist the other day. That was fantastic.
But he's shown that. Like, if you look at the two of them, there's a partnership, and you're starting to see blossoming partnerships across the pitch as well. Like, Sterling has gone to Sturridge, I think, the second most out of Suarez for assists for goals last year. There's something there between them. There's, you know, even Sturridge's goal, Sterling puts it back into a spot where Sturridge is. Like, he wins the header,
and a truly shit,
like, a midget wins the header on the pitch, and there's, like, there's joints all around him in that Southampton back four, and, you know, and it's just in the right spot, and the touch is essential, because if it doesn't, Foster picks an easy header up off the ground. What he does, the redirection, is just takes it too far away from Foster for him to be able to react again. And, you know, it's the excitement there. While a lot of things weren't right, you can see where a lot of things are going to move to, and how things are going to be much more fluid, and how things are going to be much better. Again, it's something that we're going to have to sort of keep under wraps as well a bit, because Rodgers, since he's come in, the team has been slow up until Christmas, and it's just a case of getting points on the board up till Christmas, because I've no doubt we'll fly after Christmas, as we have done in every season. And he was the same when he was at Swansea as a manager as well. So it's really just a case of grabbing as many points as we possibly can until we get to Christmas, because we know that the team will push on again the second half of the season comes on.
Yeah, Molly, I love Danny Sturridge to death. I'm not having Razor as a nickname for Sterling, but I do love the guy. And to be fair, 36 goals and 50, we've all heard the stat, and we all know that you've got to go back to some chap in the 19th century before you can equal it. It's remarkable stuff.
You saw him play, didn't you?
I was there for his debut. He's a good lad, great attitude, game lad.
Charles, the third.
But anyway, enough about my youth.
Your youth, you're middle age. Montgomery Bourne's on the mic.
Molly, I've completely lost my train of thought now, thanks to this fucker. Yeah, I was talking with Danny Sturridge. Listen, if I know it's the whole if we can keep him fit thing, but irrespective of whether we can keep him fit or not, this guy is just going to score goals and goals and goals for us, isn't it? We're looking at a guy who deserves to be getting a lot more acknowledgement than he does.
Well, when I saw that stat over the weekend that, as you said, everyone saw, I didn't realise he scored so much. Obviously, I know he scored a lot of goals, but I didn't realise his percentage was actually that high. And what impressed me most about him against Southampton is, let's be honest, he didn't have the best of games. You know, in previous, maybe go back to last season, if he wasn't having a great game, he wasn't scoring. So simply, like, you know, he just wasn't. But he didn't have a great game against Southampton, and he still put one in. He was still alert, waiting for that ball to come in and buried it. So, he is absolutely very impressive. And you are right, I don't think he gets enough credit from the fans. Like, even last year, it kind of got to me a bit that everyone, it was all about Suarez. Even when he was banned, Sturridge was banging goals and the fans were still singing the Suarez song.
Yeah.
Up in a cup. And we have to realise, we have a special talent on our books here with this kid. And a guy who is probably, I would say, happy to stay at this club long term. You know, you could never say that about Suarez. You can say it with this guy. He's been at City, he's been at Chelsea. He knows this is his last chance to be at a big club. And you can see he's putting his absolute all into it. So yeah, he's fast coming one of my favourite players, is Stephen Sturridge.
Yeah, Moldy's talking there about his standing with the fans, Phil. And we know that the Suarez songs, multiple. But we also know a friend of the pod has created a Sturridge song.
He has, yeah. Full Man Razor. We've thrown it out a few times at the start of the pod as well.
It's a lovely thing. He goes full Scouse during it.
And he does go full Scouse during it, even though he is from the north side of Dublin.
Yeah,
however,
it's impressive.
I will say one thing for him, right? It does get the bounce back in.
Yeah.
And that is important. I think if Sturridge gets a good song going for him, then we'll love him just as much as any other player. I think the song is essential.
So.
It's like the Maxi Rodriguez song as well. You know. Something really good. We need something nice and original and something new. Something that makes us bounce.
I'm having Rays. I think it's great.
Yeah, I'll take it. But can I just say, on Sturridge, I think a key turning point in the game is the introduction of Lambert for Sturridge. Because up until then, Sturridge was effectively facing the two centre-halves on his own. Right, and they were able to marshal him an awful lot during the game. If the ball was coming in, he was able to get crowded out with space. He wasn't able to get turned and he wasn't able to get shots away. As soon as Lambert comes in, and you know, we've said it, we don't know how he's going to fit into the side or whatever, right? And Chris, I saw the show as well, the show with Jay and Jack and Paul, and you mentioned it yourselves. Lambert was so effective in that goal for not doing much apart from taking up one of the defenders there. And the pressure on the defender for the initial header, that's how it's a poor header that comes out to Sterling that allows him to put it back in, and they're so deep in their own box, it means Sturridge isn't actually offside. And, you know, Lambert needs a bit, you know, a pat on the back for getting on and making a difference. And I think what it also showed is that Sturridge, when he has another forward in tandem with him, be it either Sterling playing up alongside him or whatever, that just can occupy the two centre halves, that gives him those extra couple of yards, that extra half a second of space, he'll score goals. He might struggle a wee bit if we leave him isolated in setting up with, say, a 4-2-3-1 as such. He needs players in around him to create that little bit of space that he can do his little bit of magic when that comes off.
Chris, that fair enough to say? Was that obvious to see live? I know.
Well, I think that's spot on. To be honest, yeah. I think it's Lambert did come on, and credit to Rodgers, because there's not many times last season where he made two substitutions and really did change the game.
Yeah.
It's not often that he's done it, but I think Lambert's not going to be a direct replacement for Daniel Sturridge, and I think that's pretty stupid for anyone to think that either. Lambert's going to be playing either when people sit back really, really deep, because he's actually not really a target man as such, but ultimately, like, check us with a plan B, do you know what I mean? That was pretty good in itself. But the way that Lambert did get onto a defender, and as you said, like, it, you know, he just creates that half a second of space and that little bit of doubt in the defender's mind, and Sturridge can take advantage of that. But you know, before that, let's not forget that if Sturridge is central for our first goal, Raheem Sterling doesn't get that space. So when he does play up top, a lot of his work's done in dragging defenders out of position. And that's what's important with the way that we're going to attack if we do play one up top, is that it's got to be Sterling, Coutinho and maybe Lallana or Markovic running into that space.
It's funny to watch him on the day, even though he had a small amount of time in the field. He does look quite laboured in his movement sometimes, but even if you only just focus on that lovely little cheeky handball in the lead up to the goal, you've got to give the kid credit. But talk to me about Phil Coutinho on the day. You talk about plan B. Obviously, plan A is very much centred around Phil Coutinho getting on the ball and being creative. It didn't happen for him at the weekend. And interesting to see that the introduction of that he had to go off for things to change slightly in terms of the setup. Do you think this is likely to be a feature of the season where, against certain setups, it doesn't work for Coutinho?
I think so, yeah. I think you could see the way that Southampton played with a high defensive line, didn't they, and deep lying midfielders, that they did a job on Coutinho, to be honest with them, and they played him perfectly in my eyes. I've said on our show that Rodgers has put him under a little bit of pressure by saying that he's the brains of the operation, because with Suarez going, he took up two, three defenders sometimes. Where are those defenders going to be looking now? Well, Brendan Rodgers is Secatino is the brains, so yeah. We'll just mark him out the game, do you know what I mean? And
yeah.
It's going to take him a couple of months to get used to that pressure. I think he's got quick enough feet and he's quick enough of mind to get through it and make himself an influence on the game, but it's going to take a little bit of time. You know, it's going to be a completely different game. He's not, you know, during pre-season, he only had to take on one person. His feet are so quick that he can do that. Can he do it against two people in a Premier League match? We'll see over the next couple of months.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Lee, is that? Do you think that that's the setup we're going to see with Phil Coutinho struggling maybe in certain setups?
Yeah, it'll depend. It will, like, especially against a team that play too deep, especially the way Southampton did. I didn't think it was even so much a case that Coutinho was really, like, you know, bad on the day. It was mostly that Koeman did his homework.
Yeah.
He set those pair of dogs on him and they gnashed the legs off him. Yeah. You know, like, yeah. I think very early on, within about 6-7 minutes into the game, Wanyama, like, nearly after the whistle had gone and actually, like, completely thundered through him, like, and you'd look at the size of Wanyama, that's like getting tackled by a fucking vending machine.
Fair enough.
Yeah, like, yeah, and he was there to the ground, and then the only problem now, if I had any criticism of Coutinho, it wasn't even the fact that he wasn't really able to get onto it. It was just he seemed to sort of retreat into himself after he realised that he was getting the rough treatment off the man. He didn't show himself enough. I thought that. I would think now if a player's actually getting kicked around a little bit, it would actually fire him up a little bit to try and get, like, to actually just start forcing the issue a little more himself. But he seemed a bit timid after that point, you know. It seemed like he'd been kicked and then just went away to lick his wounds. Like,
well, to be fair, he has shown a lot of fight, hasn't he? Like, and strength in developing that side of his game.
He has, and especially last year against City at home as well. Like, the fact that he had no problem, like, crashing into Yaya Toure time and time again, like, it just... This time, I'm afraid, it wasn't one of those days.
Just wasn't one of those days, yeah. Molly, just to finish us out there on Coutinho, do you picture that same idea that he might be a sort of a guy that's going to come in certain occasions? Or for you, does he start nearly every game?
Well, I think really that probably Lallana was the guy in Brendan's head that would be starting every game and Coutinho to come on. But Lallana then, during pre-season, of course, was unlucky to pick up the injuries.
Yeah.
And let's be honest, Coutinho looked absolutely fantastic during pre-season. He looked like an absolute magician.
Yeah.
And I think he's actually giving Brendan something to think about now. Who is the starter? Will it be Lallana or Coutinho? Like, over the weekend against Southampton, you're right, he didn't have the best of games, but I think credit has to go to Southampton there. Like, you know, they've lost... Was it five players over the summer? Five or six top players over the summer?
Yeah, starters.
They were like a team who didn't lose anyone. They really were. Their midfielder, Schnurlin, Wanyama, and James Ward-Prowse was absolutely fantastic. You know, Coutinho didn't get a look in, but either did Gerrard, and Lucas was like a last puppy on that pitch towards their midfield. So, you know, but every team is not going to play that way against him. You know, because if they put two or three on Coutinho, which Southampton did, that's going to free up space for people like Sterling and Sturridge and Markovic when he comes back into the squad. So I wouldn't be too worried about it. But it'll be interesting what happens when Lallana comes back from injury.
Yeah.
Who actually gets the nod in that side?
That's one of those nice headaches, I think, isn't it? right, let's move it along then and have a look at the next fixture coming up for Liverpool, which is Manchester City. Nice easy game to continue the season on a Monday night. I suppose we could start maybe by having a look at the opposition, a bit of a reflection on City's win over the weekend. If people saw it, what did we see that was particularly significant? Was it terrifying? Was it reassuring? Phil, could you start the ball rolling here?
Similar to us, won the game, weren't particularly impressive, looked very good up top, had issues in the defence and in midfield, could have drew the game. With Newcastle, Newcastle had a couple of good chances. They were strong, you know, strong defending the chances that came up against them. And Kompany looks like he's back to his imperious form, as opposed to the bit of the dodgy spell he had last season. And you'd be worried if Zabaleta is fit for the game against us. You know, what type of what he'd be like, you know, coming down if Glenn Johnson was playing on the left back there.
Yeah.
So you know, they're City. But they're the same as ourselves. At this stage of the season, you're not going to find a team that's in full throttle mode at this stage. You wouldn't expect it because players are going to be coming in and out. You know, there's going to be injuries. There's going to be bits and bobs around the start of the season which fitness arrives with. And, you know, we don't go there with any fear. We shouldn't go there with any fear. We played them in pre-season, and with the right team selection going up against them, we can definitely match them. And you know, if we play with our quick counter-attacking football the way we did it last year, there is every possibility that we can get a result there.
Yeah, Chris, we can move on straight away if you like to who you think is going to feature, but that's not a bad point that Phil makes there about City being very similar to us in terms of their opening performance. You know, they could easily have gotten caught there in the Newcastle game. Would you be particularly nervous? And maybe you could start the ball rolling, what changes you might make, if any.
Yeah, okay. I think, as Phil said, they didn't click going forwards. Jovetic looked unbelievable in pre-season, but it never quite worked for him in that game. Zecha worried me, to be honest, because he looks like a man in form who's confident and calm in his position in that side now.
Yeah.
And he's not looking over his shoulder anymore, to be honest. The spine of their team is just unbelievable. Mm. And that's what made them win the league last season, you know, from Hart to Company to Torre, and then it was based on whether Aguero was fit or not. But what I think they did better than us, and they did it again in the first game, is that they just finished teams off. Yeah. You know what I mean? They didn't need to score in the 93rd minute or whatever it was, but they don't stop, and they don't. It doesn't get nervous because they don't sit back. But as far as we go and how we approach it, I think much as like what Moley said before, is that I've got a feeling that he'll put Glenn Johnson at right back,
right.
And I'm not happy about it, but I just think that. It's a bloody big game for Mankiello to come in, do you know what I mean? Or even if Chan's fit, I can't see him coming in and making his debut at the Etihad Stadium.
Yeah.
I think it's probably going to be Joe Allen who comes in, and it could even be the same side bar Joe Allen, and I think he might even leave Moreno's debut until the game after.
Yeah, it would be a big ask for him too, wouldn't it? I mean, he's still a young kid too, Moreno. I know he's got more experience than Mankiello, but still, it's as you say, it's a big step for your first match.
It is, yeah. Look, you know, Moreno's not played in the league. He's not played. He's trained with the team, hasn't he, over the weekend?
Yeah.
But at least Mankiello's been here a couple of weeks. It worries me about Glenn Johnson, though, man. Fucking hell. I literally stay up at night thinking about him. Do you know what I mean? He's there, and I'm just constantly scared. He's like the boogeyman for me. Do you know what I mean? I just can't sleep because of the bastard. I don't know. I think I would say Mankiello, on the meritocracy that Rodgers ran last season, doesn't deserve to be dropped. If there's one person that comes out for me, it's Glenn Johnson from Moreno, but I just can't see Rodgers doing that.
Yeah, fair enough. Lee, to continue on from Chris's points there, is the most obvious change Joe Allen for Lucas, and would you tamper with the fullback situation?
Yeah, I'm afraid it would, actually. I'm trying to weigh out the pros and cons of actually taking out two experienced but severely out of form players for young lads who probably by all rights shouldn't have to make their debut like that. But I'm afraid I'd actually be way more nervous about the likes of Lucas or Glenn Johnson just playing the way they are and just completely stinking up the place, rather than I'd be worried about a bit of inexperience getting to either Mankiello or Moreno.
Yeah,
you know that these are, I'm afraid, like. I know it's your debut and all, but like, this is the kind of shit you're going to have to get used to when you play for Liverpool. You're going to be playing against big sides a lot, and like, especially they're going to be playing in the Champions League.
Hmm.
I'm afraid, like, you know, I'm not really as opposed to a baptism of fire as many would be. I think that, especially as well, I think Joe Allen on merit after, especially I think with that performance, the cameo performance that he had against Southampton, he may well have played his way into the lineup for us.
Yeah.
Markovic, I wouldn't bring into it either. I would definitely leave him out of it. I would think about reverting to a diamond, though.
Yeah.
I would think about reverting to a diamond with Sterling up front there now, and Coutinho at the head, Gerrard at the back, and Henderson obviously has to start every game. And one of either Joe Allen or, if it, Emre Can, I believe, especially because of the heavy-duty midfield the City have, Fernando and Fernandinho are likely to be in behind with Yaya Toure going forward, and I think to combat the sheer energy and athleticism of them, we think a lad the size of Chan as well, one is capable of getting about the way he is, I think that might be key in actually stopping them.
Yeah.
But now I'd like to see Mankiello continue. I thought he did very, very well. I think that he's not too eager to even get forward or anything, so I'd change up the back four, and I'd probably bring in Joe Allen at least as well, and I think nearly I don't care what what level of experience Moreno has, there's no way he can be worse than Glenn Johnson.
Yeah, okay. That's what you'd like to do. The likely thing is a different sort of setup. What's likely, Phil?
I think the only change likely is that Lucas comes out for either Allen or Emi Chan, and on the basis of what we were talking about, I'd probably like to see Chan in for this game. When he came on against City, and I know it was a pre-season friendly, but he was able to match up with the physicality when they were away.
Yeah.
And he gave the City midfield something that they hadn't to deal with any Liverpool midfield over the last two seasons, because he was knocking their lads around the ball and they were like saying to themselves, what the fuck's going on here? Like, who's your man? Who's this powerhouse? Like, do you know what I mean? Because he's a beast of a centre midfielder. He's just powerful.
The size of him,
but also the speed he can move at. Like, he reminds me so much of a young Yaya Toure in terms of size and pace that he has, and the ability to run with the ball. Like, if one of the things that we'll all think about Yaya Toure since he's come to England is the way he's able to pick up the ball at the back of the middle third of the pitch and just power his way through to the final third and create something or get a shot away. And you know, that to me, I'm looking at it going, you know, that's what Emre Can brings to this team as well. And effectively, you'll have two Jordan Hendersons, two fellas who just can't be physically intimidated on the actual pitch itself, and will be the legs and the power around Gerrard, which is what he needs as well. Which also frees him up to be able to spray passes and gives him the cover and the defensive cover that we need. But if Joe Allen starts, I'm not going to be worried, because the little fella is as tigerish as hell when put up to him. It's a big game. He reacts well in big games and is not afraid to go into those situations. He's got a lot of, you know, he's got a lot of real good courage about him in his game that goes on. And I only see the change possible being Lucas coming out of that team. I don't think Johnson comes out of the team, and I think Mankeo stays because he's done so well for us in the two games that he's there. He's clearly built up an understanding with Skirtle there on the right hand side. We are limiting our chances that are coming down the right hand side, and I don't see any reason why we take him out at this point in time, similar to the way Flanagan got in against Arsenal last year and didn't come out because he didn't do anything wrong. So why would you take out a guy out who hasn't done anything wrong for us?
Yeah.
And he's also pacey. The one fucking thing about Mankeo that people are copping onto is he can burn rubber when needs to be, and if he's up against Kolarov or Silva or whoever is coming down that line against him, he's well able to keep up with them, and that's so important to us.
Yeah, Chris, given that your bogey man is probably going to start, let's go to the midfield area. I just want to talk to you about that question that Phil's been bringing up there. I was going to go to the gym during the week and I saw Emre Can's leg muscles and I just decided to have a biscuit instead, because fuck it, what's the point? For you, is it Emre Can or is it Joe Allen that gets in ahead of Lucas? Because probably one of them does.
Look, I can see the merits of Emre Can. He's a, as was mentioned before, he's a powerhouse of a midfielder, and I think we've needed someone like that to go toe-to-toe with, like, your Chelsea's and your Man City's in the league. But I'm a real fan of Joe Allen. I think mentally he's very strong. He never gives up no matter what. Look, the stick that he got for missing against Everton, was it last season?
Yeah.
He just doesn't give up and he never hides on the pitch, and he's a fucking terrier, man. He will just snap at people's ankles, and I really like him, and I like what he does with the ball in possession as well. A lot of people talk about he just recycles possession and stuff like that, but towards the back end of last season, and I think we saw it yesterday on Sunday as well, he does like to get forward a little bit as well, and I'd be happy with Joe Allen, and I think he probably deserves it. That being said, Emre Can's probably the future of that midfield.
Yeah,
and I think he's probably the long-term replacement for Gerrard, maybe. Bit of a shout, in that we won't be playing that deep-lying midfielder, I think. And I think it was what someone touched on before, is that we'll have two players who are runners, and he's box-to-box, man, and he can do a bit of both.
Well, with that in mind, then, let's get the ball rolling then with a few predictions. How do you see that game going? What would be your shout for a match, for the result?
What would I see as the midfield?
No, your prediction for the game, Chris.
Oh, prediction?
Yeah.
Fucking hell. I am ever the optimist, so 2-1 to Liverpool?
2-1 Liverpool, yeah.
As a question?
I was going to say, this sounds so convinced.
I think we've been doing predictions for like 4 years on our show, and I've never predicted a draw or a loss, so I wouldn't. I'm not really very good at them.
Good lad. We love that. Molly, your shout on how you think the match is going to go, and if you have anything else you want to say about it, because I didn't get to you in the build-up.
Yeah, well, I'm with Phil on this. I think the only change really is going to be Lucas to come out of that side, and probably more likely Joe Allen to go in. I don't know. Personally, I'd probably have Chan in there. You know, prediction-wise, I'm going to go with nil all.
Nil-all, okay.
Nil-all, I'd take a nil-all right now.
That'd be an interesting one for us, wouldn't it, a nil-all? I can't remember the last time we had a nil-all draw.
We don't really do them. Lee, where,
that'd be interesting.
How are you calling?
I don't know, really, to be honest. Like, the Etihad is the Etihad, you know. Like, it's not a fucking easy ground to win at. Like, I don't know, who managed it last season? Chelsea, was that it?
Yeah.
Like, that was it. So, like, and I think also that my, whatever prediction that I have, I think that correlates directly with how the lineup goes out. I think that, like, you know, I think you're going to find it very hard to predict a win for us if we put Glenn Johnson out there. You know, like, you're actually presenting a fracture point in the defence of the city. Like,
yeah,
it's like having a fucking scarecrow smoking cigars.
Yeah.
That's what Glenn Johnson in that defence is like. But I'm going to I can't see a draw either. Yeah, I don't want to say a loss, but oh, fuck it.
4-0?
I'm sorry. City are full strength at the moment. There's no injuries. I'll go with it. The best I think we'll do is a draw. 2-2, I'd say.
Score draw. Okay, well, I think we win it. I think Danny Sturridge scores against his old club. Phil?
Anything else than my weekly prediction of a 4-0 win to City? What fucking jinx us now end up?
That's exactly right. Thank you for that.
That's how you do, Chris. That's how you do predictions, Chris.
I am Lou Schware. You are listening to Trippers Chat
with Trev.
So, Chris, get started. What's your favourite non-swearing swear word? Like, he's got fudge there. What would be yours?
Oh, Jesus.
There you go.
It's not so much a swear word, but it's more of an insult. Is that all right?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah,
I like to call someone a plum. It's not really very offensive, but like if that's you say great. Like, you know, a floppy plum,
yeah,
comes across quite well.
I like that. Yeah. There's something about the sound, but that's brilliant. Molly, you wanted this one as well.
Well, my favourite non-swearing swear word, and I have to admit, you're probably more likely to hear it on Made in Chelsea than you are in the streets of Limerick, but whoopsie daisy.
How do you?
I love a bit of whoopsie daisy. Show us if you could just drop your coins as you're going to the shop. You're like, oh, whoopsie daisy.
Molly, I cannot imagine you saying that.
Oh, yeah.
I can see you in the middle of the pub now, Molly. You drop your point. Oopsie daisy.
Jesus.
Or in the sack with ourselves, and you know, I don't go and type, oh, whoopsie daisy.
Especially if fucking Ricky Lambert's head is anywhere close to him.
Yeah. James asks us, he's talking about this water challenge. Have you seen this crack?
The ice bucket challenge. Yeah.
The water challenge sounds like a bondage game or something.
Well, that's not an area of expertise of mine because I'm far too old for that shit. But he says, which LFC player, past or present, would you want to see doing white? I just want empty ice water over Razor Ruddock's head, personally. I just that's just a thing I'd like to do. Anyone else like any suggestions there for that?
You could do with Lucas, I suppose, but you'd have to change it up a little bit.
Oh, yeah?
Where you'd maybe have put a towel over his face and then put the ice water over the towel. But just switch it up a little bit.
You said Razor Ruddock there now. Is it past or present now?
I don't care.
When you said Ruddock, I was like, I thought it was a current Liverpool player. Now, I'll tell you, if we're going former Liverpool players, I'd very much like to do it with Mark Lawrence, and only I'd like to replace the ice with scorpions.
Ice scorpions over there.
The scorpion bucket challenge. Just put his head into a bucket of scorpions. The other way around.
Chris, next one up just happens to be a serious one for you here. You can take it whatever way you want. It's from Kieran, and Kieran's asking about the fact that Rodgers hasn't really done as much work in terms of turning defenders' careers around as he has with the likes of Henderson and Sterling and Coutinho. Kieran's wondering, does he need a defensive coach alongside him?
Yeah, I can see why you'd say that. It's a difficult one, isn't it? Because it's the obvious shout, but the way that we play football, I don't know how many defensive coaches would like that, and you know, and could deal with that, because basically we just leave the centre backs alone.
Yeah.
Completely unguarded. So what, you're going to hire Tony Pulis to look after two centre-backs?
Yeah.
And the entire fucking pitch? Yeah. It just doesn't work like that, does it? Do you know what I mean? Unfortunately, Rodgers is bringing an ethos. He's not bringing a formation or anything. He's bringing an ethos with him.
Yeah.
And that ethos doesn't really include defending. And the players seem to have bought into it. The fans have bought into it because it's been quite fun to watch. I just can't see us getting a defensive coach.
So you think it's just a kind of it's almost like a side effect of the good stuff that we have is that we have to accept that as a bad thing?
I do, yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, you've got to get players who are good in space and who are good at attacking the ball. And that's why I don't think Skirtle's going to be here forever. Although, you know, I do think he's doing well. I think Lovren's a front-foot defender. Sacco's a front-foot defender. I think they're probably the future. And then they're also good in space when someone's running at them. I think Skirtle can be left alone at times.
Yeah.
And hung out to dry and turn quite easily when he's in that space.
Yeah, fair enough. Phil, Tony Pulis, defensive coach. He's free.
Only for me is that Tony Pulis never works in football again. Like, say, yeah, come on in, Tony. You'll be the defensive coach. And then stick him in a cupboard. In a cupboard. Lock it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And throw the key away.
Yeah.
And then cover up the wall with concrete.
And burn the cap.
And no. Leave the peak just sticking out from the concrete. So we know who's there.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good. Yeah. I like your thinking of that. Molly.
Like a Han Solo type.
Pulis just up in the concrete.
Ho, ho, ho.
Now, Tony.
Molly, next question is from Andy Davidson. He's wondering, for our last transfer, and it probably is going to be that at this stage, do we go for an out-and-out striker or a winger or a striker? Will that necessarily change up the formation? Let's use that question to talk about who you think might be likely targets for us.
Well, I think we forget about wingers or midfielders. It's an out-and-out striker we're after. That's plainly obvious to anyone.
Yeah.
And I think it's plainly obvious that Falcao is that guy that we're after. Even we're just listening to Brendan Rodgers' press conference where he said, look, we're willing to leave it late and, you know, last stage. And if it doesn't happen, that means that guy hasn't come available, which basically means Falcao's fucked off to Madrid, is what he's basically saying there.
Yeah.
So I think Falcao's the guy we're after. And, you know, I've already signed him on my FIFA 14 team, so I think it's going to happen. He also sent me an autograph over Twitter over the weekend. So, yeah, that one must be in the bag.
Yeah, very good, very good. any other like?
So,
Chris and Molly, question for you two fellas on the line there. Adam's wondering about the correlation between the increased price and decreased size of chocolate bars over the last 10 years. Have you noticed this and how much has it upset you, basically? Chris,
yeah,
we'll start with you.
Fucking hell. To be honest, I think it's linked to do with the increase in size of my arse and the decrease in size of my cock.
You don't have to go any further, fella, if you don't want to. He's leaving it there. He's leaving it there.
How would you follow that, like?
Last question's from Paul Murray. We'll go around everyone on this. Paul wonders, would you rather go bald or grey? And he says that might be a sore subject for some of us. I don't know what he means by that. Phil Casey, bald or grey?
Ooh.
Go on, fella. Go on.
Grey.
Fuck yeah. Chris, bald or grey?
Definitely grey. I can't grow a beard, so I want to look distinguished at some point.
Fair. Molly, bald or grey?
Oh, Trevor, I'm probably like you, buddy. I'd love to have a choice in the matter, but I'm actually going bald. I got bald at top and grey at the side. You know, it's desperate.
Well, if you had a choice, which one would you plump for, fella?
Oh, yeah, I'd definitely plump for grey.
For fuck's sake. Lee.
I'm sorry, man. I've actually thought about this since I was 11, and I've been cultivating the thought of a Roberto Mancini for a long time, man. I'm afraid so.
That's on the way, is it?
I'm afraid so, man. There's no real history of baldness in my family, so like if I start going grey, I'm just going all in. I'm just dealing with it. Like,
a nice big floppy mane of grey hair.
Absolutely, man. Yeah.
I was sad, you saw. I couldn't give a shit. I love being bald.
You're actually grey and bald.
My beard is grey.
That was what's left of your hair.
No. Right, lads. That's us. Thanks a lot. Okay, we finish with some admin then. As always, we want to mention Astro Park. 5-7 aside football, this is the place to be. So get on here to the website at astropark.ie and book your game. Our own website, lfcdaytrippers.com, is somewhere that you should be checking on to too. You'll be mightily impressed by the content and the work that's being done by the lads on there. Michael asks... Phil, specifically here, there's a question for you, Phil. It's coming from Michael Mahan. And he wants you to talk about the economic climate in Sudan, if you want, just for a little bit.
Yeah, I suppose they were expecting that the oil production in 2014, when it increased, would see a jump in GDP of about 40%. But due to the poor infrastructure states and the ongoing civil war in the country, it hasn't really happened. And their trade deficit continues because there's infrastructural problems and there's also inter-regional problems, and they can't get the product to market, and they really are struggling. They need to sort out the war force before they can sort out anything else. And if they do that, then the infrastructure can come next and they can build supply lines.
That was fucking brilliant. Next one.
It's like that scene in Old School where Will Ferrell blacks out. Just that, like, you know, he snaps out of it. He doesn't have a clue what he's talking about. Like,
that's brilliant research there, but you kid. J